We're very pleased to have Alyssa Hinton and her exhibition and having published her book, Earth Consciousness and Cultural Revelations, on now in April all the way until September 25th, open daily by appointment. Just call in advance, 802-257-7898. Alyssa's work is just very exciting. Mixture of multiracial, multi-ethnic, her exploration into her indigenous Tuscaroran, Saponi, and Osage roots, and even beyond that to the ancient Mississippian mound ancestors. And the work that comes out is wonderful collage, assemblage, installations, I just feel excited to be in there. We're very pleased to have her here, and the book is beautiful. We love it.
So is this the first time you have shown her work in the gallery?
It is.
And what inspired, what grabbed you about this collection?
We, in our gallery, one of the themes is work that is ancient but contemporary. So this is for sure has a very, is in touch with ancient, the ancient, and also is very contemporary. And her story, her process is very intriguing.
Wonderful, thank you. Alyssa, thank you for being here. This is wonderful. And I think Adam mentioned in an email that you spent time in Vermont as a child.
Yeah, actually, just going to Putney School. My grandmother founded Putney School, so I kind of had to convince the rest of my family to let me actually go to Putney School, believe it or not. So I used to hang out with my grandmother a lot. We lived on the same property in Pennsylvania, so almost every weekend I would just go to her place and we would make pancakes. And so I convinced her to convince my father to let me go to Putney. So I went for 2 years, 78 to 80. Which is good because Putney's really art focused, and I've always been an artist. My preschool teacher told my mom, "Watch out, you've got an artist on your hands. This explains, you know, X, Y, and Z." And so then my mom started keeping all of my art, like all my old finger paintings and scribble scrabbles and things. So it was really good that I got to go to Putney, and it was almost like being in art school before growing up, you know. Because of the level of just the facilities there and the teachers and everything and the, you know, just, you know, kind of exposing us to all kinds of ideas that most 14-year-olds or 15-year-olds wouldn't get.
Wonderful. And Adam also mentioned in an email about your choice to follow some dig into your family history,
mm-hmm.
and did you actually move further south as part of that kind of exploration?
I did, much later, though. So it was sort of like, you know, as a teenager, like most teenagers, hopefully you're very idealistic and you're trying to get in touch with yourself. You're kind of forging your identity. And so as a teenager at Putney and before Putney, and after, I was exploring this whole identity theme in drawings and etchings. We did a lot of etching at Putney and block prints and whatnot. So I was exploring this whole identity theme because it was always just a big part of me. Because living in America, you know, where you have these boxes, these kind of categories, racial categories, you're supposed to pick, basically. So if you're mixed, and nobody says you have to pick, but society sends that message. So if you're mixed, you have a lot to figure out. So, you know, so I started to be thinking about my identity as a teenager. And then, you know, when you go to college, especially in art school, you end up with all these different professors, and each one has their agenda of what they want you to emulate. You know, usually they want you to emulate them, something that they know how to do well. And so you end up trying out all of these different ideas, and hopefully, you know, you can at some point come back around to your own and maybe blend what you learned from the other people with your own ideas. So that's what ended up happening. I went to art school. I went to a lot of different art schools. Then I managed to transfer most of my credits. And then when I ended up being a teacher at a private school outside of Philadelphia, which is a Quaker boarding school, I was surrounded by teenagers. And I started to kind of think about my teenagerhood. And that's when the whole Indian identity thing just grabbed me, because it had been sort of hibernating. And then I just started having these visions of things like dreams, waking dreams, while I was teaching students. And I taught a lot of collage, so then I ended up just kind of like on the down low making collage in my office while my kids were busy doing their artwork. I had everything kind of like smooth, and not the first year. First year was hard, but eventually I, you know, had it set up that way. And then as soon as I started doing that, those collages, which were totally about Indian identity and North Carolina and my mom's family background. And at that point, I didn't know that I was Tuscarora. I knew that I had a grandmother who was Osage, or a great-grandmother who was Osage. But the Tuscarora thing was really buried pretty deep. But in any case, right around that time, I inherited property from my grandfather, who we didn't even know he owned this plantation property in Johnston County, North Carolina. So when he passed away, we inherited it. And then I ended up meeting this long-lost cousin of mine down in Center City, Philly, where I went to sing with an Indian women's singing circle. We sang, but we also just joked a lot and laughed. And so I ended up meeting this woman who turned out to be this relative of mine. And she was able to explain who we actually were, that we were Tuscarora. Once we established that we were related, it started out as a joke. We were like, look at us. We could be related. But then it ended up being true. So then we ended up moving down here. I think I'm answering your question about moving. Yeah, so that was 1997. Yeah, so I was already, my daughter was already 7 years old. So I was already in my mid-30s. Yeah, by the time I moved down here. And the idea was to, since I was getting all these sort of messages about stuff from North Carolina, and I don't know, I think I said down here. I act like I'm still in North Carolina. I'm in Vermont now. But I meant, but anyway, so.
I heard you say home is actually what I heard.
Yeah, yeah. So we moved down to North Carolina because we wanted to be kind of on location. We felt like we could connect with other relatives down there, tribal relatives. And, my cousin, she had all kinds of ideas about musical goals and getting people to sing, and also ceremonial. She resurrected some really old ceremonies. They were doing some things, but she was able to really shed some light on like original old ceremonies. And so I was just sort of like the sidekick, just kind of helping get that done. And we did that for a while. And she had troops of youngsters traveling up all the way up to the, you know, Northeast and everything from North Carolina. And then me, I was in my little studio apartment just doing this art that's in this book, the Awakening series, which there's nine works from the Awakening series at the CX Silver Gallery now, in addition to a later series, which is the Ancestral Spaceship Assemblage Collage series. So that's like collage on top of assemblage, all found wood. And then came the Indigenous Iconic Earth Altar, which is a fiber installation. It's 11, well, when it's set up the way it was designed to be set up, ideally it's 11 feet by 11 feet across. And people can walk kind of within it or like around through it.
Is that the medicine wheel?
Yes, the medicine wheel. Okay. And that's in the side room. Although we pulled the eagle, the thunderbird, we pulled her out, and she's in the big window in their gallery. They have this amazing sort of window dressing window. Yeah, she's in the window. It looks really good there because these pieces are pretty large. Yeah.
And since we're on tape and on radio, and people may not have the visuals, mm-hmm. I would love for you to describe what some of your pieces look like, just okay. For the listening audience.
Okay, so the Thunderbird Power Dress, if you can imagine, you know, a cloth collage, which a digital cloth collage, it's kind of like a big flat layered textured fiber piece with a lot of patterning. In this case, again, this is a vision that I had later on. I think it was around 2005. I had this vision of this white eagle with a circuit board body. So it's got the circuit board body. I also added copper elements because I thought, okay, well, this is obviously a very modern rendition of a very old, you know, Thunderbird creation story icon, basically. Canon, I'll call it a canon, you know, Thunderbird shows up in Native American art all over the place on everything. And I thought, well, this is obviously a really old rendition. I mean, a really new translation for a really old thing, you know, having the circuit board imagery to show the conductivity, you know, of electricity. So then I added copper because copper is like the ultimate conductor. And humans have been using copper for, you know, God knows how long. So I put actual copper in there, in the feet, and then in the eye area, and then even at the tip there where the electrical wire is coming out from the eye. And then I put electrical box, they're like these little clips that you find on electrical boxes on there. So it's very electrical, to sum it up. Yeah, if you could just imagine an irregularly shaped fiber collage with large wings and lots of textures and patterns, rather abstract, with a very large eye surrounded by copper.
I think of great imperial robes, although the emperors are, what should we say, the ancestors. And I think of just amazing robes, and it's called a power dress, and it has the look of an amazing piece of clothing that is like protecting us all.
Interesting. I like the protection part of it. That actually, consciously, the installation with the power dresses was inspired by a show at the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian about war shirts and deerskin dresses, women's dresses. They had several different shows there about war shirts and dresses. And I had the books and I was reading about the symbology of the clothing itself. And it turns out the clothing is almost like a wearable medicine wheel. They often have the bottom half of the shirt or the dress and the top half. And then especially the women's dresses, which these are all dresses because I am a woman. Even though I love those shirts, I wouldn't mind having one of those. But the dresses, there's this whole idea of like, you know, you want to be wearing a female deer hide, and then you don't really do too much to the hide. You keep like the extensions that were the legs, you keep those. The tail you keep and you fold it over and down the front. So you're living not only physically in this female skin, but you're getting some of the energy that being had, and it's contributing to your power and energy, which is one of the reasons why I called it a power dress. And there is a protective aspect to it, not only because of that, but also because you're following the way that your ancestors did it. There's a continuum, so there's like a bridge from between the past and into the future that you are maintaining. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think that's one thing I absolutely loved when I saw some of your pieces is these great dresses that and these symbols that are old, mm-hmm. but they were also mixed with modern elements. And I think what I loved for me personally is that's what being mixed or even being an American is about. You have these old, you have these new, and it's like, how do you take all this and be you?
Mm-hmm.
And also I think I appreciated it because I was living overseas a few years ago And I don't remember the conversation of Columbus Day came up. And one of my UK friends said, yeah, but there's no more Indians left in America, so why does it matter? And it just brought home for me this idea of, yeah, it's a culture that exists in Westerns. Mm-hmm. Or it's a culture that kind of stopped in 1800.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing happened after that. And so for me, these pieces were just, on a personal level, were just so living and breathing and old and new. And I just really appreciated that. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you said that because I sold one of the ancestral spaceships. I sold it to the University College Cork in Ireland, and they wanted me to write something for the plaque. They have this little engraved plaque that goes next to it that explains the significance of it. And the last sentence basically says that to kind of like bring the past up to the present so that it's not dead, so that it's alive. And it's just got a new rendition, a new interpretation that is now. And it's actually another, it's similar to the Thunderbird Power Dress. It's a Thunderbird wooden assemblage collage, but it's got that circuit board stuff on it and everything. And I mean, it's not actually true that there are no more Indians here. I mean, obviously, but it is true that there are way, way few of us and that there are whole nations that are gone. But then again, there are a lot of people that are unidentified. They're Indians, but they're either not concerned with their background or they've been hiding it for several generations to the point where it's just laying dormant and they don't really discuss it. Like in my family, before I started digging it all up, I wasn't discussed very often. It was just sort of like, yeah, we had this ancestor who's Osage. And then the North Carolina contingent, there was some kind of Cherokee story, like almost everybody has this Cherokee grandmother story. But when I looked into it, it wasn't Cherokee, it was Tuscarora. Yeah, and there was slavery involved. I mean, who wants to talk about slavery after, you know, the generations that were in slavery? They certainly didn't want to be talking about it. And it just got tucked under the rug and then just became habit not to, you know, it's just kind of not even conscious. But I talked about it a lot. So I guess that's just me. That's, I guess, part of my purpose is just to dig stuff up.
I think that's what artists and storytellers do.
Right.
Like, ooh, little thread. Let's just keep
going. Yeah, let's see. And you know, curiosity. I've always been very curious, sometimes to my detriment, but yeah.
So these series that you mentioned, while you were creating them, were there any, I always call them aha moments, where you learn something about yourself or you learn something about the medium or you learn something about what the piece itself is kind of telling you? Did you have anything?
Yeah, a lot. But I think I'll kind of narrow it down to this whole when I was in the classroom and I had this, I would call it like one of the major visions, which was a mound with a female body somehow. I couldn't quite grab it, but I tried to sketch it. And so I started doing these collages. They're part of the Spiritual Ground series, which is, there are a few of those, that series in the book. And there's an essay that written by a scholar from University of Washington in Seattle who talks about the Spiritual Ground series. And the number one piece he talks about is the mound. It's called Ancestral Plane. So I started creating these collages of this mound experience. And then as I did the artwork, the mound became a womb because it was like the artwork was educating me. And I was kind of like channeling some kind of information. And then it was almost like a bunch of arrows all crisscrossing, arrows of like information and influence. So like I'd have conversations with people and I would get another piece of the puzzle, you know, or I would like pick a book up. You know how sometimes you pick a book up in the library and you just let it open? And then, boom, right there on that page, there'd be some other little snippet of information that would, like, feed it. And so over time, the mound became a womb, a female womb. And then the womb became a turtle, a sea turtle with, you know, the arch, that same arch shape. It became a sea turtle. And then I had this vision of this tree, And so I put the tree on the sea turtle's back. And I, not knowing that I was creating the Iroquois creation story, because the Tuscarora are part of the Iroquois Confederacy, they just got split apart a long time ago. But after the Tuscarora War, the Oneida invited the remainder, the sort of war refugees, to go up, and they joined them on the reservation up near Niagara Falls. But in any case, so one day I went to some Indian gathering event thing, and I was looking over at the person sitting next to me had some kind of like book, and it had this turtle with a tree growing out the top, and it had some kind of Iroquois insignia on it. And I was like, I was thinking to myself, I just came up with that on my own, not knowing what it was. And now I know what it is. I mean, it's really, that's a serious aha moment. And those kinds of things happened a lot. So they're like beyond aha moments. They're almost scary. It's like, and here's the thing. I shouldn't say scary. They make you want to be free, because I feel like if I allow myself enough time and sort of a relaxed type of certain frame of mind where I'm receptive, I feel like I can come up with things that have been gone. I can recreate things that used to be. But then you have the task of making a living in the modern day world, and the two do not go hand in hand. So it's very, that's why it's scary, because it's like, wow, I could be doing this, but I have to do this, so I would like to just do the art, because I feel like I need to live for a really long time, because I have a lot more that I want to do, and I feel like a lot more could come through the art and educate me, and then in turn I can share it with other people. And I know other people like that. Like my cousin, the singer, she's like that. Stuff comes through her. I know an Okuniechi man. He's a lawyer in D.C., but he dreamed the Okuniechi Saponi language from scratch, So there are others, lots of people. They're just sort of here, tucked away here and there,
Wonderful, wonderful. And I love that, to be free.
Yeah.
So is your kind of day job still teaching?
Yeah, I teach kids. I teach Photoshop to kids age 12 to through 15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they're lucky.
The 12-year-olds really recognize that they're lucky. It's like Christmas every day, and I really like teaching them. The eighth graders are always, they're always going to be eighth graders. Eighth grade is the most awkward stage. They're cool, though. They're cool. As long as I just stay really cool, then that's the only way to deal with them.
I admire high school teachers, because it's like I walk into a high school classroom and I'm like, this reminds me of all my bad high school years.
Right, right. That's traumatizing.
Thank you. Is there anything you hope people, if they come to the show, understand about your art or take away? Anything you want to share with them?
I would say it's an earth message so just imagine, the medicine wheel, which is there, that's part of the fiber installation. There's an octagonal medicine wheel on the floor. So just imagine, the Thunderbird created the universe. So the Thunderbird created the medicine wheel, really, because the medicine wheel represents the entire universe and all the interrelatedness of all the elements and life forms and you name it. It's all in there. So just imagine then that all the other artworks in the exhibit kind of flew off from the medicine wheel and clung to the walls. So you've got you've got two-dimensional deer digital collages, turtle ones, another Thunderbird one, corn, all these different elements and energies and animals and, some figurative elements as well. All there together. So, and all together, what it creates is a representation of the indigenous philosophy, the most prominent indigenous philosophy. That's like the whole West, all indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere have this philosophy of interrelatedness, sort of the synthesis of everything working together. There is not a hierarchy. Everything has its little sort of niche in life, and you need it all, even mosquitoes and, you know, rats. You know, you need all of those. They all serve a purpose. And so it's this we are all related philosophy, which is an earth-friendly philosophy. It is the original environmentalist philosophy. And I think right now, globally, what the world is dealing with, number one, transition to a global market. Number two, the environment. Without a healthy environment, nothing else can really take place in a good form or fashion anyway. And it's like a body. It's like you being ill. When you get sick, what else can you do? You can't even go to work, you know. And it's the same with the earth. The earth needs to be, well, for us to survive on the earth doesn't need us on it. For us to survive here, we need to heed, you know, the messages. They're not even messages. There's just, you know, whole species of animals dying out in front of our eyes. I mean, we need to do something about that. So it's my hope that my work would kind of heighten this people's sensitivity to that issue. Oh, that's like the bigger, the sort of larger purpose of it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Those were all my questions. Anything you wanted to add? Wish I had asked.
You can find this book of Alyssa's wonderful work and ideas at the art gallery, or you can, there's also on the website, cxlovergallery.com/Alyssa-Hinton. You can also, there's a link to buying it direct from the printer and having it shipped right to your home. And the book's really beautiful. You can preview it online. You can also see a hard copy in the gallery and come and see the show. It's really, it's a very individualized show. Different people have different feelings about it.
And I would add, visit my website, alyssahinton.com. And if you care to do so, sign up for my newsletter. I send out a seasonal newsletter, sometimes twice a season. I'm trying to work my way up to once a month. But, you know, where I talk about my maybe a new work or an event that I'm involved in. I do kind of a variety of events. I've got a dream conference coming up in Greenville, South Carolina, where I'll be sending out a newsletter about that. And then I'm making a trip to Ireland where my eagle sculpture is, and I'm doing a workshop there for the students and staff at the University of College Cork. It's a creativity workshop to expand people's imagination. There, it's a more of a science-oriented university, and so it's a design workshop. And the idea is to kind of like contribute to the scientific mind, but through art and design. And it was inspired by a doctor who's there, who he's a pediatrician. He helps premature babies survive, you know, the beginning of their lives. And he teaches his med students how to really observe subtle details in the babies, what the babies are exhibiting. And he teaches them art and art appreciation to get their sensitivity heightened so they can observe the babies, whatever that may be, on the details, observing the details. So that helped inspire me to come up with this